You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
I was going to open last week's show with some thoughts about something that was bubbling up on queer Twitter. But then I got distracted by a shiny object or a slimy object, Rick Santorum. And instead, I opened last week's show with my thoughts about a sudden discharge of Santorum. Santorum discharged by CNN. The thing I almost talked about last week, you know, honestly, I was worried I would just be amplifying some inane voices on Twitter if I talked about it. It was just a couple of dumb tweets. One read, "Please don't bring your kinks or fetishes to Pride. There are minors at Pride, and this can sexualize the event." Someone else said that kinksters at Pride make some people uncomfortable. And someone else said that they were a queer minor, and if they saw any kinksters at Pride, they were going to call the cops and have them arrested. So, no police at Pride, unless someone shows up in a harness, in which case, call the cops. The debate about kinksters at Pride went on to blow up all over queer Twitter and queer Instagram and led to dueling think pieces and big publications. It even made it into Roxane Gay's column in the New York Times over the weekend. So instead of looking prescient by addressing it first, by getting to it at the top of last week's show, it's going to look like I'm playing catch up by talking about it at the top of this week's show. But I got to talk about it. First, asking people not to sexualize Pride is to miss the point. Pride is literally a parade that celebrates people who aren't heterosexual or cisgender. Telling people not to sexualize Pride is like telling people not to Irishize St. Patrick's Day. The Irishness is kind of the whole point. And the point is that who we are sexually isn't something we should be ashamed of or have to hide, even if that makes some people uncomfortable. There have been arguments in the queer community about how queer people should behave in public, about what we should wear and how we should act, long before the first Pride Parade kicked off. The first Pride Parade, which took place in New York City in June of 1970 to mark the first anniversary of the Stonewall Riots. Quick proof that God loves the gays? There were other gay bars in New York City the police could have raided that night in June of 1969. The Stonewall Riots could have just as easily have been the Kooky Riots or the Ramrod Riots. Anyway, for the record, kinksters have always been a part of Pride. The woman credited with making the first Pride Parade happen, an organizer named Brenda Howard, sometimes called the Mother of Pride, she was kinky herself and bisexual and polyamorous. And she brought all that, she brought everything she was to that first Pride Parade in 1970. The movement for gay rights, for LGBTQ rights, didn't start at Stonewall or during that first Pride Parade. The movement already existed. An earlier gay rights organization, the Mattachine Society, which was founded in 1950, with the Daughters of Bilitis, a lesbian organization, organized picket lines outside the White House in 1965. And they had a dress code for their picket line. Men had to wear jackets and ties, women had to wear skirts and blouses, and no hand-holding or public displays of affection allowed. The idea, then, was to put an unthreatening public face on homosexuals and lesbians. And before you roll your eyes and dismiss those picketers as cowardly assimilationists, these protests took place at a time when you could lose your job and become unemployable and get thrown out of your apartment and not be able to get a new one and get arrested and get thrown in jail for being gay. It was also a time when you could expect to be disowned by your family, so you had no one to fall back on after you lost your job and your apartment for being openly gay. Those picketers outside the White House in their ties and jackets and skirts and blouses, they weren't cowards. They were incredibly brave. But after Stonewall, heading out of the 60s and into the 70s, the feeling was, to hell with trying to fit in or tame ourselves down. To hell with respectability politics. We were going to be ourselves. We were going to love ourselves and each other and be who we were and do it in public. And if that made some people uncomfortable, too bad. They might not like it, but they're going to have to get used to it. They're going to have to get used to us. And some of us are kinky. And I got to say, people who spend all their time worrying about seeing kinksters at Pride remind me of a certain type. They remind me of all those right-wing Christian fundamentalists out there who insist that seeing gay people in public, at the Pride Parade or anywhere else, makes them uncomfortable because it forces them to think about all the gay sex all the gays are having in their gay apartments with their gay boyfriends. It's a cliche that these guys, and they're mostly guys, it's a cliche that these guys, guys who are offended by the sight of the most mainstream, sedately dressed, gender-conforming gay people holding hands in public, it is a cliche that these guys often turn out to be gay themselves. Messy closet cases externalizing an internal conflict. A conflict that's so often resolved by a rent boy scandal that that's become a cliche too. So, yeah. When I read tweets from people saying they don't want to see kinksters at Pride, when they say it makes them uncomfortable because they don't want to think about kinksters and all the kinky shit the kinksters do with their kinky friends, yeah, there's more than one way to externalize an internal conflict and more than one internal conflict that can be externalized. It's a tell that the anti-kink at Pride people want to weaponize children in the same way homophobes do. Two men holding hands, say the homophobes, how will I explain this to my children? Well, some men love each other. Some women love each other. Easy, obvious, age-appropriate explanation. Oh, a man in a puppy mask and a dog collar. How will I explain this to my children? Some adults love to dress up and play and pretend. Easy, obvious, age-appropriate explanation. Do you want to explain to your kids that some men love men and some women love women and some people are bi and some people are trans? Don't bring your kids to Pride. Do you want to explain to your kids that some adults like to play and pretend and wear crazy outfits? Don't bring your kids to Pride. Can't stand the sight of kinky people? Don't bring yourself to Pride. And to anyone out there who is seriously freaked out about what kids might see at Pride, just wait until you get a load of what kids can see on their phones. And before we start, a quick shout out to Tristan Torres. He's a 14-year-old gay kid growing up in a small town in Ohio. Tristan wore a Pride flag to school and was assaulted. Another student tore the flag off him, knocked him down, punched him, choked him. And Torres, with the support of his family, because our families are on our sides now, Tristan is fighting back. And just like you gotta love the name of the gay bar where the queers fought back in 1969, you gotta love the name of the town where Tristan and his family are fighting back now. Defiance. That's the name of the town. Defiance, Ohio, population 16,000. The spirit of Stonewall can be found in Defiance. All right, coming up on today's show, the mysterious case of the melting dildos. Sarah Dysock from Early to Bed joins us to play Nancy Drew. That's on the micro version of the Savage Lovecast. And Dr. Tobias Kohler from the Mayo Clinic joins us to talk about vasectomies. And we may or may not have tricked Dr. Kohler from the Mayo Clinic into sticking around long enough to talk about ball busting too. All that coming up on today's show. This episode is brought to you by Helix Sleep, the best mattress for your individualized comfort. Right now, my listeners get up to $200 off all mattress orders at helixsleep.com/savage. Me Undies makes feel-good underpants your butt will be proud to wear and you will be proud to be seen in. They will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own, and to check it out yourself, go to meundies.com/savage. The Pill Club is a birth control subscription prescribed by a medical professional and delivered straight to your door for free. Go to thepillclub.com/savage.
Hey, Dan. I have a quarantine success story I want to share. And it's more of a vaccine success story, I suppose. I'm in my mid-30s, long married to my sexy, awesome husband. We've got 4 kids. And the pandemic has been fucking hard. Homeschooling, all 4 of our children, working from home. My kids range between 5 and 15. So sex has been, it's been like really challenging to be able to have sex with my husband. My teenager's up till midnight. My 5-year-old's up at dawn. We're tired. But we make it work. We have a lot of great sexual compatibility. To get to the point, my husband's really into ass. That's his like focus of real erotic excitement and turn on. But he's also got a really thick cock, like super girthy. So for me to take it in the ass, I have to warm up substantially. It takes me a long time. I have to be really turned on, really relaxed. And I don't drink or smoke pot anymore, and my life is so much better without those things. But they used to be super helpful in that like relaxation to accommodate. So without them, it just takes a lot of time, and time we've not been able to give to anal play in quarantine. So in comes the vaccine. Thank God. Grandma came down and watched the kids for a couple of nights. My honey and I got an Airbnb and took our fucking time in the middle of the day with like lights on, able to lube and eat ass and play with toys and butt plugs. And I got to talk dirty about how I was his filthy ass queen escort, which is something that has always turned me on. The idea that he might hire somebody for this anal play who can accommodate more than I, you know, anatomically quite can. It was fucking amazing. And then finally last week, the kids went back to school a few days a week. So for the first time in years and years and years and years, all four of my children are going to school at the same time. So my house is empty, and my husband came home from work early, and I pegged him in the ass, and we just did all the slow ass play that we haven't been able to do for a year, and it was amazing. So get vaccinated so moms can fuck their husbands in the ass.
Here's to vaccinated grandparents, and here's to schools reopening, and here's hoping your 15-year-old kid isn't also a Savage Lovecast listener or your mom. We like to start the show with a success story each week. That was a particularly great one with a great takeaway message. Get vaccinated, everybody, so you can fuck your husband if you've got one in the ass with a strap-on dildo while your kids, if you've got them, are back at school. If you've got a great success story that you'd like to share, give us a call. We may start next week's show with your sex success story.
Hey, Dan and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I'm a 30-year-old queer woman living in Seattle. I've been seeing a couple for about a month now. I had an individual relationship with each woman in the couple, and it was not to my knowledge then, but now I know it was a poly under duress situation where one of the partners in the couple didn't want to be poly, but felt like she was going to lose the other partner if she didn't at least try it. And it blew up in all of our faces, and they broke up. Part of them breaking up is that me and the PUD also broke up because she doesn't want to be poly. So now I'm still dating the other partner, and we've been dating for about a month, so not very long, but I still want to be there to emotionally support her in this time because, you know, she's going through a breakup. Her and her girlfriend were together for like 5 years, and so it's a pretty significant relationship, and she's sad about it, and fair enough. But her and I have only been dating for a month, and I don't want to be her emotional life raft right now. Not that I don't want to care for her and be nurturing, because I do. I just can't be her saving grace right now. And at the same time, I don't want to just fall into the girlfriend-shaped hole that exists in her life now. I'm not going to just fill that space. So I'm just wondering if you could suggest some boundaries that might be good for me to set up with this partner to prevent me from just becoming her life after filling the girlfriend size hole in her life.
So you want to care for her. You want to support her, this woman you're seeing. And this is the woman in the couple that used to exist. This is the woman who wanted to be poly. And she was with someone who didn't want to be poly, who you're also seeing. So you were seeing someone who was poly under duress. And you had a problem with that ethically. And yet you're dating the woman who issued the ultimatum to her former partner that resulted in her former partner agreeing to attempt polyamory or try polyamory, which is how she became a PUD. This other woman was a PUD, a poly under duress person. And so that relationship is over, and you're uncomfortable with the PUDdedness, the PUDishness of the girl who's out of your life, the woman who's out of your life, but you're okay dating the woman who issued that ultimatum. And there's always an ultimatum. When someone's a PUD, it's because the other partner said, we have to try this or the relationship is over, and a person agrees to try polyamory under duress. And you're with that woman, the woman who issued the ultimatum. And I don't necessarily have a problem with that, but I think based on your call, what I thought I heard at the beginning of your call, you might have a problem with that because you had a problem with seeing someone who was a PUD, but not, it seems, dating someone or being with someone or continuing to see someone who made somebody else into a PUD. All right, just something to think about, just something I wanted to highlight. Now, you say you want to care for this woman and you want to support her, but you don't want to be her emotional life raft. And while you do care about her, you don't want to be her saving grace. You don't want to be responsible for filling the girlfriend-shaped hole in her life. So you want to care, but you don't want to care too much. And so how do you Goldilocks this? How do you care just right? I don't know. I mean, you're either dating this woman or you're not dating this woman. Either you're occupying some of the space in her life that a girlfriend used to occupy, or you're not occupying that space. You ask about how to establish a boundary. Well, I think here's a boundary you could establish. If you feel this ambiguous about this relationship, if you want in but not so far in, stop calling her your partner, first of all. You've only been dating her for a month. I think that's way too soon to slap the partner label on it. And perhaps it's the slapping of the partner label on it that's making you feel a little bit anxious about perhaps overpromising, making a bigger promise than you're able to deliver onto this woman about how much, I guess, emotional labor you're going to be able to do for her as she processes the grief of the end of her previous relationship. And it sounds like you were, if not the cause of it, you were involved in the circumstances that led to the end of that relationship. They weren't sexually compatible. They didn't want the same thing out of a relationship. The woman you're with now wanted an open relationship or a polyamorous relationship, and her ex clearly didn't. But that's neither here nor there. Like, if you don't want to be sort of the girlfriend or the new girlfriend or the potential future new girlfriend, you should step back from this relationship. But it's going to be really hard to find that sweet spot. You can establish boundaries all day long. You can draw lines all day long. But trying to find the sweet spot where you're offering her care, but not too much care, emotional support, but not too much emotional support, where you're there for her, but not creating a sense of obligation that makes you feel constrained or feel like you've overcommitted during this time in her life where she's going through this breakup and there you are, and maybe she's clinging to you a little hard. Yeah, I don't think you're going to be able to draw lines around that that make you feel comfortable in this relationship. So my advice would be to get, at least for the moment, out of this relationship. Stop seeing this woman. Tell her you're going to take a step back and give her 3 months or 6 months to grieve the end of her 5-year relationship. And after she's grieved it, if she wants to pick back up with you, if she wants to reconnect, begin to date you, she should give you a shout. But there's a chance that 3 months, 6 months from now, you may not hear that shout. She may feel rejected by you as well, after having been rejected by you as well, and move on from you. So if you are interested in this woman and having a future with this woman, yeah, I think you're going to have to risk going all in at this moment, filling that girlfriend-shaped hole in her life, in her lap. And if you can't do that, if you can't be there for her in the way she might need you to be there for her right now, I think maybe you need to get away from her. And maybe she needs to get away from you. Not get away from you because you're a bad person. You may be the right person. You may be a great person. You may be a very good person. And you may have been the right person for her. But you're not the right person for her at this time. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Helix Sleep. Helix, the sex mattress. That's right, I said the sex mattress. Helix doesn't mind me saying that because they know what people are doing on their mattresses other than sleeping on them. And knowing that, Helix Sleep designed their mattresses with sex in mind. And then when you're done with the sexin', you'll have the best sleep of your life. Helix Sleep has a quiz that takes just 2 minutes to complete and matches your body type and sleep preferences to the perfect mattress for you. Terry and I matched with the Lux Midnight mattress because we wanted something that felt not too soft, but not too firm either, and we tend to move around all night even when we're asleep. With Helix, You get a mattress that you know will be perfect for the way you sleep. They have several different mattress models to choose from, soft, medium, and firm mattresses. Mattresses great for cooling you down if you sleep hot, and even a Helix Plus mattress for plus-sized folks. So if you're looking for a mattress, you take the quiz, you order the mattress that you're matched to, and the mattress comes right to your door, shipped for free. You don't ever have to go to a mattress store again. Just go to helixsleep.com/savage, take their two-minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a customized mattress that, again, will give you the best sleep of your life. They have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. They'll even pick it up for you if you don't love it, but they're not going to need to pick it up because you are going to love it. Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you. Go to helixsleep.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. Calling from a faraway country. As most of my friends have already been sick with COVID or vaccinated, I am planning to have an offline birthday party for my 30th birthday. I'm having a logistical issue, though. I would love to invite two of the people I'm currently dating, but not sure how to go about it so that people feel comfortable. The first one is my romantic friend with whom we started having sex recently. He is also pretty new in the city and doesn't have many friends, so I thought that going to a party would be a good opportunity for him to feel included. The other one could potentially become my boyfriend, but I guess we're just not there yet. They know about each other and are cool about it, but haven't met in person. All three of us are dating other people, but it is not a polyamorous arrangement, and I think I could take it exclusive with one of them if we ever get there. Could you please let me know your thoughts, whether there is an ethical way to include both of these great men into my celebration?
All right, this one's almost too easy. Yes, there is an ethical way for you to include both of these men. You invite them both. You tell each of them that the other will be there. And if one or the other, or both of these wonderful guys, have a problem with that or they're uncomfortable with that, then they can skip the party. Sorted. Done that for you. Congratulations on your 30th birthday. I just want to highlight that you called it an offline birthday party, which I think is really interesting. We had so much online activity over the last year that now activities aren't just activities. They're offline activities. We have to qualify them like that. And I got to say, before I let you go, if poly is off the table, polyamory isn't something you're interested in. It seems to me that you are dating more than one person. You have feelings for both of these guys and they know about each other. So it's all above board. It's all ethical. And if that's not polyamory, well, it's so close to polyamory that you can smell polyamory's breath. Again, happy birthday. I hope the party's a big success and I hope both these guys come. We made it. Summer is here, which means it's time for a trip to the old swimming hole. MeUndies might be known for making the softest undies and bralettes and lounge pants, my favorite in the world, but now they make swimwear too. Check out their bikinis, one pieces, and two different lengths of swim trunks. Each piece comes in solid colors and limited edition prints, so you can mix and match a swim outfit to fit your mood. Every piece of their new swimwear collection comes in sizes XS to 4XL. And they're also eco-friendly, which means you can hang out in the ocean with swimwear that's good for the ocean. There are roughly 8 recycled plastic bottles in each pair of men's trunks. Each one piece and bikini is made from recycled nylon derived from factory scraps and old fishing nets. And that makes Nancy smile serenely. Speaking of Nancy, she said she plans to get her teenage daughter a bikini because her kid's been using MeUndies underwear as a swimsuit already anyway. Might as well level up and get the actual MeUndies bikini. And Nancy can't take it anymore seeing her kid out there in her underpants. And I can't wait to see Terry in one of their swim trunks. MeUndies has a great offer for my listeners. For any first-time purchasers, you get 15% off and free shipping. To get your 15% off your first order and free shipping, go to MeUndies.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you. Go to MeUndies.com/savage.
Hey, Dan, I really liked your discussion recently about sex toys and the material that they're made of, and it really reminded me of something I wanted to ask you. I recently got a dildo, and it kind of melted in the drawer that I kept it in. It's not in a hot drawer or anything, like, it's just in my bedroom. and like two of my dildos melted into each other and kind of at a 90 degree angle. It was like weird, but obviously it's ruined. And I think it has to do with the material that it's made of and it interacting with another material. I don't know. Any idea?
Joining me by phone to help tackle this question, Sarah Dysock, owner of Early to Bed, Chicago's feminist sex shop. Hey, Sarah, thanks for jumping on the phone. Thanks for coming back on the podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So I have a hunch about what might be going on in that drawer with all those dildos, but you're the expert, so I'm going to defer. What is the deal?
Oh, well, it is very clear to me that the caller has some mystery meat dildos made out of God knows what, and that is totally how you can expect them to behave by melting into each other, interacting in weird ways. So yeah, it is a low quality sex toy that they have.
So define mystery meat dildo. That's a hilarious phrase. I think it's really evocative, but what do you mean by mystery meat dildo?
Well, I use it to mean anything that's not silicone, that is made out of materials that we're just not sure what they are. Like, this industry is unregulated and no one tells you what's in their weird, smelly, kind of strange PVC sex toys. And so I call them mystery meat because we don't really know what's in them. A lot of them will give off a weird smell, or they'll be really volatile. So they will like melt with each other, or they could transfer color between two toys if they're touching each other. So yeah, anything that's not 100% silicone and is soft, I put in the mystery meat department.
And you shouldn't put mystery meat dildos in your drawer next to your other dildos, but also not in your body, is my guess?
I recommend no. If it's bad, if it's something that is, you're not sure what it's made out of, you don't necessarily want to put it in your body. And I highly recommend, I mean, silicone toys are so affordable nowadays. Ditch your toys that are jelly or whatever. And if you do have jelly toys or mystery meat toys that you insist on using, I highly recommend using condoms with them and keeping them in separate fabric bags in your drawer so they don't melt into each other.
I'm going to go with your first recommendation, though, which is to throw those things the fuck away and get some quality sex toys, which usually means going, you know, not to Sex Toys R Us, not buying your dildos at the truck stop. That means going to a store like Early to Bed, going to a feminist, progressive store online or brick and mortar where you're assured of some quality. Because like you said, this industry is unregulated. And if you're buying sex toys at the novelty shop or some scummy place, you're going to get a scummy dildo that's going to melt in your drawer because it's made out of napalm or God knows what.
Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more. If you can find a retailer that you can trust, then you know that the sex toys that you are getting are going to be body safe and they're going to last longer, right? Like, why not invest in a toy that can be your buddy for a long period of time as opposed to something that's basically disposable?
Yeah, those jelly ones, the mystery meat dildos, are cheaper, but a dildo that you invest in can be your friend for a very long time. And there are materials other than silicone. There are quality now ceramic, glass, stainless steel toys. Yeah. So it doesn't have to be silicone, medical grade silicone preferably. You have other options, but never the jelly option. And the issue for this caller is he bought a cheap ass dildo, put it in a drawer next to another cheap ass dildo, and they exploded.
Exactly. And that happens all the time. What you can expect from those types of toys, for sure.
Where can people find Early to Bed online?
You can find Early to Bed online at early2bed.com, or you can just search Google Early to Bed Chicago and we'll come up.
Sarah Dysock, owner of Early to Bed, Chicago's feminist sex toy shop. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone. It's always a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you. My pleasure as well.
Do you need to renew your birth control prescription? Want to switch your birth control? Maybe try birth control for the first time? Whether you know the brand you want or you want help finding the best option for you, the Pill Club medical team has your back. The Pill Club is a birth control subscription prescribed by a medical professional and delivered straight to your door for free in discreet packaging. The Pill Club carries over 120 FDA-approved brands. Most brands of birth control are free with insurance or Medicaid. Otherwise, prices start as low as $9 per month without insurance. What's more, their licensed medical team is just a text away to give you the best reproductive health care. So skip the office and waiting in line at the pharmacy and join the club, the Pill Club.
Right now, when you go to thepillclub.com/savage, the Pill Club is offering a $10 donation to bedsider.org for every Savage Lovecast listener who becomes a patient. Your donation will help low-income individuals get access to birth control through bedsider.org. That's thepillclub.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you to get your first birth control care package and donate $10 to help more people in need of affordable birth control. Remember, thepillclub.com/savage. You must use the link to make a donation.
Hi, Dan. I am a 30-year-old heterosexual woman calling from the South, and I'm calling with a question about a cousin of mine. So to give you all a little bit of background, we come from a really conservative Southern Baptist family, and about half the family actively works in evangelical ministry. And despite the fact that me and a couple other cousins are pretty liberal and not very religious, we are a pretty close-knit family. This cousin of mine was outed to me this week because she is apparently dating my high school best friend's cousin, who is out to her family. And so I found out through my best friend. So I don't know if my cousin is aware that I am friends with her girlfriend's cousin, right? I don't know if she knows that there's a link there, but I'm wondering what to do with this information. And maybe the answer is nothing, but part of me does want to reach out to her and let her know, you know, that I'm on her side and I support her. I think she probably knows that already, but I do imagine it could kind of take a weight off her shoulders, that she doesn't have to have that coming out conversation with everybody over and over again. She's pretty introverted, and I could imagine that kind of being relieving for her, but I also could imagine it being super stressful for her because it kind of opens the gates to, okay, do I have to come out to the family now? Or, you know, I feel like it does take a little bit of control away from her coming out process. So I'm just trying to be sensitive to that. And I don't want her to feel like I violated her privacy, which I feel like I sort of did. But, you know, I just want to be supportive, and I just want her to know that I love her and that I will go to bat for her if any of our conservative evangelical family tries to kick her out.
How do you think you might have violated her privacy? By having a friend? By having a friend who's dating your cousin? That's not violating your cousin's privacy unless you hacked your friend's email to discover who she was dating, and that's how you found out that she was dating your cousin. No, you didn't violate anybody's privacy. You know what you know. And I think that you should let your cousin know that you know it, and immediately let her know, after you let her know that you know it, immediately tell her that you're not going to say anything to anyone else in your, I'm sorry, horrible sounding family. You're not going to say anything to other relatives, to her parents. You're not going to say anything to anyone. You just wanted her to know that you love and support her, and that if she needs an ally, you're there. You're on her side. That she is someone in her extended, horrible, but not entirely horrible family that she can open up to and that she can reach out to. And if it ever comes to it that she is outed or decides to come out and there is a shit show, that there will be someone in her family, from her family, that is on her side, that is in her corner. Yeah, it's entirely possible that hearing from you, particularly about this, is going to freak her out, at least initially, but weigh that momentary freak out before you reassure her that you're not going to say anything to anybody. Weigh that initial freak out against the isolation that she may feel, the sense that her entire family is arrayed against her, and that if she should ever come out, that she will lose her entire family. You know, a girlfriend, this woman that she's dating now, girlfriends, particularly early in life, they come and go. There's not a lot of security in a girlfriend. And if her girlfriend's all that she has, or feels that she's all she has, she may stick it out in a relationship that's not very good for her, not casting any aspersions on your friend. But, you know, we've all seen it. Somebody who is entirely dependent on a romantic partner is less likely to walk away from that romantic partner, even when they need to. And just for her to know that she's not entirely dependent on that girlfriend, that she has family, and that she has family that loves and accepts her and knows that she's queer. Ideally, we find out family members are queer when they tell us, when they come out to us. There are times, however, when we find out because our queer relatives are out there in the world dating people. That's something that you do publicly, and people have a right to confide in their friends, as I assume your friend confided in you, which is how you found out that she was dating your cousin. People have a right to confide in their friends about their relationships and share the details of their relationships. And once we're dating, we can't control necessarily who knows or how far that has spread. And so it got to you. It got to you that your cousin is dating your friend and that your cousin is queer. And you should reach out to your cousin, err on the side of offering her your support. Even if it freaks her out that you found out, she needs to know that dating is a public thing. You found out, other people could find out. She may want to get ahead of that, get out in front of it, and come out to her family when she's in a good place where she can come out to them from a position of strength. And if she wants to do that, she's got an ally. She's got an ally in the family who's going to be in her corner. That person is you. Let her know.
Hey, Dan, I'm a 31-year-old cis gay man in the Northeast. I've got kind of a dilemma for you. A couple of years ago, I went on vacation with some friends and met a guy there. And it was, on my end at least, platonic. I wasn't interested sexually or romantically. But we spent a good weekend together, exchanged numbers, and then went back to our respective cities. I think I saw him maybe one other time that summer, but it was all platonic. Fast forward to this year, and I got a job near him in his same city. And so we get in contact again. We set up a time to meet up for coffee and catch up. And it was cute. We had a good time, and we set up another time to hang out, this time for dinner. Well, dinner turned to drinks, and drinks turned to smokes, and you guessed it, smoking turned to sex. So I go home thinking, wow, I think I might have found a really good friends with benefits. But Dan, since then, he's been sending me texts, not texts, he's been sending me memes on Instagram every day, sometimes 2-3 times a day. And, you know, I'm friendly and I laugh at them and like them and respond, but it's a little too much. And I'm wondering if I have the responsibility to say to him, you know, this amount of communication is just too much for me. And if you can even really call it communication, he just sends messages with no words hardly ever. For context, I'm married. We have a beautiful open relationship that works really well for us, going on 6 years. He knows that. He knows my husband. My husband knows him. And they've talked. They've never met in person. So I know that he's not, you know, trying to make a move or anything. He knows I'm not available romantically. So I'm just wondering, am I just being a jerk? Should I just let him, you know, wear himself out? Should I tell him that, you know, this amount of communication is too much? Or, you know, should I just let it go? Am I just being a jerk?
Stop being polite. Stop giving this guy positive reinforcement. When he sends you a meme and then sends you another one and sends you another one, and each time he sends a meme, you laugh, you LOL, you send the crying laughter smiley face back at him. Whatever you're doing is giving him the impression that you're enjoying this, that you like memes and receiving memes just as much as he likes sending them and receiving them himself. Stop it. You can't expect someone who doesn't have the common sense to realize that most people don't want to receive a random barrage of memes every day from a casual acquaintance, even one that they've just had sex with. You can't expect someone without that kind of common sense to pick up on the fact that you're not really into this, particularly if you're sending him LOLs and crying and laughter, smiley faces, emojis back at him. So stop that. Stop sending positive reinforcement. Stop responding to anything he sends you that isn't a text, that isn't a come fuck me or whatever it is that you do want to hear from him, or about his day or about politics or something else. Don't respond to anything that isn't something that you would like to get from him. And you could model some good behavior for him if you'd like and send him the kind of text messages that you would like to receive from him. But if he doesn't stop sending you memes after you stop giving him all this positive reinforcement when he sends you memes, you're going to have to use your words and risk hurting his feelings. And there is very little at stake here. You're not interested in dating him. He's a casual acquaintance. You've met up with him a few times in the last few years. if he gets all butthurt when you say, please stop sending me all these memes. I don't really enjoy memes. I don't really get memes, but I'm happy to see you again and hang out. And I really enjoy talking with you. Let's do more of that. If he gets all butthurt because you say you don't want memes anymore, yeah, you don't want him around. And if you tell him to stop sending you memes and he keeps sending you memes, well, that's sort of the, I guess, lowest of low grade, low bore, low key consent violations. Please don't do this. Please stop doing this. And someone keeps doing that, whatever it is, thoughtlessly, nah, probably not somebody you want to be in bed with again. And in his defense, there's lots of people out there who are constantly swapping memes. It's almost a language that some people speak. Some people regard it as a kind of currency. Others regard forwarding memes as a substitute for a personality. I don't know what's going on with him. I do know what's going on with you, though. You're hesitant to use your words to tell the truth, and that's the quickest way you could make this stop. So, no more positive reinforcement. If the memes keep coming, use your words. If he gets upset and doesn't want to see you again, good riddance.
Hey, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I am a 26-year-old man living in the inland Northwest, and I have a social media question for you. So I was doing some totally benign Instagram stalking of a friend's account the other day, and I made a probably embarrassing discovery. I discovered that this friend, who incidentally is a straight married man, follows several erotic Instagram accounts ranging from the tasteful to the sensual and all the way up to the fetish. He has also liked some specific photos from these accounts, which give me a good idea of what he's into. Now, I feel bad for having discovered this, and usually I wouldn't care. I mean, he's entitled to jerk off to whatever he wants to jerk off to, like whatever he likes. But my issue is that this is, you know, viewable by anyone who has followed him on social media, and that includes friends, family members, so on and so forth. So my question is whether I should discreetly let him know that he's letting all his friends and followers who care to investigate his profile know the kind of stuff that gets him off, or maybe should I just take this secret to the grave with me?
This seems to me to be a do unto others as you would have them do unto you moment. If the shoes were on the other feet, if he had stumbled over your Instagram account or dug through your Instagram account or done some light stalking of your Instagram account, or someone else had and they'd noticed you were following a bunch of fetish accounts and figured that you weren't aware that this was public and that other people could see the accounts that you were following and see what you were liking and make assumptions about what you might be jerking off to, would you want that person to give you a heads up? And I think the answer to that question is, yeah, you would want that person to let you know, to give you the heads up, to tell you that this is public in case you weren't already aware that it was public so that you could create, as so many people have created, a second Instagram account where you can follow all the kinky, weird, or inappropriate shit that you don't want your friends or coworkers or kids or acquaintances or spouses to see. So if I were you, I would, after applying the golden rule, the do unto others you would have them do unto you to this, I would give him a call. Maybe send him a text message. You can include a face-saving little white lie. You can say, Instagram, let me know. We follow a couple of the same accounts, and I noticed ... Just wanted to let you know ... This is public. So that, you know, I'm sure you have your own kinks, your own weirdnesses, your own fetishes. I'm sure you follow some people on Instagram purely for the eye candy. And we're all in this sex thing together. So even if it's a lie, saying, I noticed we follow a couple of the same accounts. Did you know? Just wanted you to know. Wanted you to give the heads up. It just communicates to him that you're not judging him, shaming him around his kinks or sexual interests, just by acknowledging, even if it's a little white lie, that you have a few kinks of your own, which I assume that you do. And a few accounts you follow on Instagram just to jack off to, or jack off to the memory to, or jack off to the mental images that they put into your head that you can access on your Solodex later. So, yeah, give him the heads up that you yourself, that I myself would like to be given if those shoes around the other feet. Before we get to listener comments this week, let's read some of your tweets. GJ Wyatt tweets, "Thank you, Dan Savage and the Savage Lovecast team. Yesterday, a good friend said their teen has a new name and new pronouns. And thanks to you, I was able to have an intelligent conversation with my friend about it. Hashtag LGBTQIA. Thank you, GJ. That's very gratifying to read. And thank you for being there for your friend. Mint Owl tweets, "I'd like to hear a fake Dan Savage take on this." Mint's tweet linked to a story about William Amos, a Canadian politician who's stepping back from his duties, but not resigning after, quote, urinating without realizing he was on camera during a virtual session of the House of Commons, reports the CBC. This was the second time the NP has been, quote, caught unawares on webcam. So his colleagues had already seen his dick once before. My take. Well, after being invited to his second orgy, the French philosopher Voltaire is alleged to have said, "Once a philosopher, twice a pervert." About Amos, I might say, once caught unawares, twice a pervert. Not that there's anything wrong with being a pervert, some of my best friends and all that, but there's a time and a place for exposing yourself online, and unless you're a camboy, work isn't the time or the place. And finally, Fallon Johnson tweets, "At Fake Dan Savage dropping some Indigenous history on the Savage Lovecast while ripping Rick Santorum really made my morning. He said Iroquois instead of Haudenosaunee, but I'll let it slide. I didn't know Iroquois wasn't the name used by the Five Nations of the Haudenosaunee Federation, or that Iroquois was considered a derogatory term until you dropped that on me. Fallon, thank you for the correction." Fallon is the host of Unreserved, a podcast about Canada's Indigenous communities and cultures, and the co-host of The Secret Life of Canada. I have to say, I binged The Secret Life of Canada over the weekend, and I really enjoyed it. There's an episode about a top secret aircraft carrier the Allies tried to build in Canada during World War II, a ship made entirely out of ice, no shit, ice. It was a fascinating listen, and I am looking forward to the episode that is sure to be coming about MP William Amos. All right, thanks to everybody who posted about the show to your social media accounts this week. We really appreciate it. And now, listener comments.
Hi, Dan. As a furry, I appreciated your interview with Matt Baum in Podcast 761. He clearly seems to get us, and I appreciate the conversation you two had. If I may add some perspective from someone with, you know, over 20 years in the furry fandom, I think an important thing is not to only compare the fandom to fetish communities, but also to other fandom communities, like, say, you know, Star Trek. Because furries, by and large, are fans of each other. We have our own artists that draw our own original characters. You know, we're fans of each other's stuff, art, writing, etc. By and large, you know, most of the artwork is of our own original characters and stuff like that. Whereas, like Star Trek, which is owned by Paramount, has to worry about lawyers. You know, if Paramount's legal department basically declared open season on fan art, costuming, fan events, whatever, and let people do whatever they wanted without having to worry about a cease and desist, the Star Trek fandom would probably be so flooded with porn and fan art and what have you that someone, you guys, would be declaring it possibly a fetish community within a year. As Matt Baum pointed out, you know, furries are people and people are sexual, but, you know, the furry fandom is not inherently sexual, even if many of us are.
Hi, Dan. I'm just calling to respond to the caller in your last episode who was talking about the man who stood up in her wife's lecture to talk about how he was equally oppressed to the LGBT community. I think one piece of the conversation you missed is that this was a straight man standing up to say that he was equally oppressed in a conversation with a queer woman. And I think what was going on in some ways was he was trying to minimize her experience of oppression and the experiences of the queer community by stating that he was experiencing equal oppression. And I think that's bullshit. I think that she was right to shut him down.
Hey, Dan, this is a thought for the trans dude who's been living the best 4 years of his life. That is awesome. Congratulations. I'm wondering if what's happening here is that your standards have just gone way up since you've started loving yourself and living out who you really are. As we get older, as we get to know ourselves better, I just came out about 5 years ago, so I feel like I'm going through the same transformation of being picky, and rightfully so, because you're amazing and you deserve the best of the best.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for me or a comment about this week's show? There are two ways to get them to us. You can call us at 206-302-2064, or you can use the voice memo app on your phone to record your question or comment and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. This Thursday, June 3rd at noon Pacific time, I'll be doing another SAC launch exclusively for Savage Lovecast Magnum subscribers. The last one, the first SAC launch was a blast. We all got to know each other a little better in the Zoom chat, and I answered a bunch of questions for Magnum subscribers. If you're already a Magnum subscriber, you don't need to do anything. We'll send out a meeting link to everyone on Thursday morning. If you're not already a Magnum subscriber, head to savagelovecast.com and become one. All access, ad-free episodes, exclusive content, and an invitation to these monthly get-togethers with me, SAC Lunch. Space is limited, so make sure you join the link right at me. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian, and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy will all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.